Thank you for listening to Highland Radio. It is the 9 till noon show. What are you doing tonight? For a lot of people, it's going to be this, whether they like it or not.
Please welcome his World Championship debut, the winner of 5 development tours. He's a reigning World Youth Champion. Ladies and gentlemen, 16 years old from England, it's the sensational
Yeah, indeed. That was last year, 16-year-old Luke Littler making his debut at the World Darts Championships at the Ali Pally. He reached the final on that occasion, which was a remarkable achievement. He's had a remarkable season. He's raced up the rankings, and he's made almost $1 million in prize money. God knows how much in endorsements. That's what we need our 17-year-olds doing, don't we? Making us millionaires. But anyway, he's back in a final, and he's taking on Michael van Gerwen tonight. And Mark from our sports team is a big darts fan. He's going to be joining us in this hour to talk a little bit about that. So are you looking forward to the darts? Have you followed the darts? Are you a dart widow or darts widower? It's a remarkable sport. It's the second most watched sport in Britain, would you believe, behind the Premiership. It's incredibly profitable. It's absolutely huge. Are you looking forward to it? Are you watching it? Who do you think is going to win? Have you enjoyed the tournament so far? We're going to talk darts for a bit. So 086 60 25,000. I want you involved in that conversation as well. Hi there. Due to travel to Letterkenny from Donegal Town today, what's the roads like in Letterkenny? Thanks. They're okay. Passable with care is the best way to describe them. The way I would view the roads, and I'm not an expert and I'm not necessarily giving advice in this regard, is there is no uniform answer to what the roads are like, because there are patches where they're perfectly fine, and then there are patches where, you know, there's local situations like shelter or what have you, where there could be some ice. So it's just a case of driving carefully, allowing yourself braking distance and driving appropriate to the weather conditions. I don't think they're so bad whereby you would certainly you'd put a journey from Donegal Town to Letterkenny off. That's just my opinion. The St. Eugene's Hall Moville Variety Concert that was cancelled in December is on tonight. The show starts at 7:30 p.m. Anyone with a ticket can use it for tonight. The host's Mickey Doherty with an array of local artists. Happy New Year. Not sure if you're back at work yet. Well, I am. Sorry, I don't think that it was for me to read out. It's about the Letterkenny Rotary Club, the ecumenical service for the blessing of the ribbons from their Tree of Remembrance, which was in Letterkenny Shopping Centre before Christmas, will take place on Sunday at 3 p.m. in the Church of the Irish Martyrs, Letterkenny. There'll be a light refreshment served after the service and everyone's welcome. Indeed, I have a ribbon on that tree as well, so that'll be blessed on Sunday. Hi Greg, would anyone know if Friar Hegarty of Father Hegarty's rock fame in Buncrana, whether he is actually buried there or was his body moved to Dublin back then? Well, this has obviously come in off the back of a conversation about history. I don't know the answer to that question, but maybe you should. Is Friar Hegarty of Father Hegarty's rock fame in Buncrana, is he buried locally or is he buried somewhere else? I'm sure there's someone out there who knows the answer to that question. This country has a two-tier system, believes this listener, which is sort of language that we're hearing from Britain and America now. I always ask the question, if you want foreigners in our country, would you let them stay in your house with your children? I wouldn't see that as a gotcha question. There are a couple of gotcha questions out there. I don't think the proviso for someone moving to Australia from here is that they have to live in a house with an Australian, or if I went to work in London, which I did, that I have to go and live in a Londoner's house, and that is some sort of a rule of thumb for people moving from one country to the other. But anyway, this is this person's big question. We've reached a place in this country where the white Irish is now a second-class citizen. I've no issue with them being here, but there's no way they should be given better social welfare or housing in front of Irish citizens. I'm not sure they're getting better housing or social welfare. To be honest with you, there is housing that's there. Some might say there is some prioritization on housing lists. I've yet to see evidence of that. I think, though, as a white Irish person, I think we're a long way off being a second-class citizen, to be honest with you. But I do appreciate your opinion, and that's your opinion. I just think maybe things just aren't quite as bad as you feel if you get out there into the real world, if you know what I mean. Grainne Griffin is Director of Communications at the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission and is with us now. Good morning to you, Grainne.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Thank you so much for joining us. Okay, right. New research has shown that consumers are unsure of their consumer rights or what to do with unwanted gifts. Is it simple to answer that question? What are our rights? What can we do?
I think it's probably not simple, and that's really what's leading to probably some of the confusion that our research has uncovered. You know, consumers are unsure how long the rights last for, and in general, they actually really underestimate just how strong they are.
How strong are they? Maybe you could give us a brief overview.
Well, we have some of the strongest rights in Europe, actually, and a lot of that is because consumer rights in Ireland actually last up to 6 years. So, like, obviously it depends on the good and how long it would normally last, but you can actually go back to a retailer if a good is faulty and there's an obligation on them to put it right for up to 6 years. Now, what happens is your rights start out particularly strong in terms of who has to prove the fault, and then they become, you know, the balance of responsibility changes over the time period. So for the first 30 days after you buy something, for the first 30 days, if something turns out to be faulty, it wasn't as described, or it doesn't work, you have a very straightforward right to a refund. You know, you don't have to debate, you know, exchanges or repairs or anything like that. You can just go, I want a refund. Mm-hmm. And that's the first 30 days.
What if you've chucked the box in the bin?
Well, I suppose the product is faulty. So, I mean, ultimately the obligation is on the retailer to put it right. The law doesn't get into the kind of detail around boxes or anything like that. But ultimately, if you go in before a court, a judge is going to look at the situation and go, look, what's reasonable here? There isn't an expectation that you'll have kept all packaging. There is an expectation that you will have kept your proof of purchase. Mm. So ultimately, what a judge is going to want to know is, did you definitely buy this product from this retailer? But there isn't an expectation that everybody keeps, you know, all packaging and everything from products, you know, once they have them out of the box.
So someone might go in, right, and say, I don't know, buy a vacuum cleaner, and there's a manufacturer's warranty on it. Maybe it's a year. The person at the till might say to you, do you want to buy extra protection? You know, that's you can pay a certain amount and get 2 years extra protection. Is it worthwhile taking out that additional protection, or do your rights mean that if that vacuum cleaner were to become faulty in a certain period of time, and you can outline what that is, Grainne, that there's no need to spend that extra money?
Ultimately, it's kind of like an extra insurance policy. And like, you're totally spot on to bring up the warranties and the extra protections, because I think that's really where a lot of the confusion arises. So ultimately, when something becomes faulty, within the first year, the onus is on the retailer to show that the product wasn't faulty when you bought it. After the first year, the onus is on the consumer to prove that the product is faulty, you know, that this isn't, you know, you didn't break it, you know, or something like that. So I suppose it kind of depends on what level of protection you want. Like, ultimately, if you're going to go back about something after the first 12 months are up, like, say, let's say it's a washing machine, for example, and it's, you know, it's no longer working or it's leaking, you know, there might be a need for an engineer's report in that case to kind of somebody to come out and have a look at it, because obviously we're not washing machine engineers. So, you know, there is often a need for someone to come out and do an inspection and go, look, what's wrong with this? What needs to be fixed? And, you know, is it just normal wear and tear? Is this the usual part you might replace? Or is this actually a fault with the machine? You know, this shouldn't happen at this point. And if it's after a year, the onus will be on the consumer to potentially pay for that report, whereas before a year, the onus is likely to be on the retailer because they have to prove that it's not faulty. So it is a little bit complicated, and I suppose that's where warranties and additional protections and things like that can be appealing, because often they're kind of quibble-free. You know, it's just like you have the protection, and sometimes
and
but
in
it
fairness
does
to
depend Grainne, on the fine print.
Some of that additional protection, it can be for accidental damage as well. So if you bought a tablet and you dropped it and it cracked the screen, so there can be advantages beyond the protection of you know, faults outside of the consumer's control.
Oh, absolutely. But it is that piece about the fine print. You know, if you want that extra reassurance and you want to know if, you know, if a kid pours a cup of tea over the iPad or whatever it might be, you know, you do need to check and see, does it include water damage? Does it include accidental damage? Or is it just if the product turns out to be, you know, to have something wrong with it? So It is complicated, and I think that's what you can see is that people do get confused by it. But I suppose what we'd say to people is going, look, you do have rights. You may well be underestimating how strong they are. And ultimately, you don't need to know all your rights instantly, you know, when, you know, just as you go through life. But if something goes wrong, do give us a ring, you know, in the CCPC or, you know, go onto our website, ccpc.ie, just to check what your rights might be. And then do follow up with the retailer, you know, and ask them to put it right.
Really quite surprised in this research. A third of respondents say they never include the gift receipt with Christmas presents, which obviously is going to potentially create problems. The gift receipt, you should always get one. I don't think they're always given, but you can always get one. And always include that, because it's not just about a change of mind or what have you, or if the product's not, you know, you wanted to change your size or whatever it might be. It can be to resolve issues like we're talking about right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people, gifts turn out to be faulty just as much as kind of regular products that people buy. And giving a gift receipt just gives people that flexibility. I mean, ultimately, you know, if you're spending money on somebody, you want them to get the value for that money. And ideally, you want them to get something that really suits them. So, you know, it is positive that a third of people, you know, that people do give them. But yeah, look, for a lot of people, they're not given. And for people then who might have got Christmas presents, you know, and they just they don't suit or they're not for them, they're potentially now in a position where they're going, well, look, what do I do with it? You know, so, look, there's different options. I mean, I do think it's positive. We can see that people are trying to, in many cases, make the best out of what they've got. Like, they might re-gift it. They might give it to charity. You know, there's different things that you can do with them. You can also, if it's very clear where a product is from, like, for example, if it's own brand clothing or something from a store and it has the tag still on, even if you don't have the receipt, we would always encourage consumers to go back to the store and say, look, this was a gift, you know, and I'm looking to exchange it. You're very unlikely to get a refund, really, really unlikely to get a refund without a receipt or a proof of purchase. But you may be able to organise an exchange, you know, so it's always worth asking.
I dealt with one company over Christmas with an element of a faulty product. And they didn't quibble it. You know, I didn't take the hand and they didn't quibble it, and they issued a replacement part. And I would be so loyal to that company going forward now. It's so much in business's interest to look after their customers. I think that sometimes it amazes me that they accept the reputational damage for quibbling over often pennies with a customer. Granny, before I let you go, obviously this time of year a lot of people will be changing the cars. And I'm just curious what the protections are in terms of purchasing a new vehicle. Some of the new vehicles, their warranty might be only 3 years. Others, you might go back, and if you didn't use the correct oil, for an example, you know, the approved oil, that they might say, right, sorry, your warranty's not there any longer. And you may not realise that. Sometimes the warranty starts in the middle of the year and not from, sorry, at the start of the year and not from when you purchase the vehicle. And there's lots of little plot holes or pitfalls that people listening to this show have fallen into before. So in terms of, does your office cover, the commission, does it cover the purchase of new cars? And do people's protections go beyond what the car manufacturers and the car dealers promise?
Do you know, it's actually the number one issue that consumers contact us about is cars, both used cars and new cars. And sometimes people are surprised that we get so many calls about new cars, because they just assume that new cars, you know, everything works perfectly and no issues arise. But that's not the case. Loads of things do arise. And like you say, there can be all sorts of fine print, like you mentioned the oil thing, but even things like, you know, obligation to do regular servicing and things like that in order to avail of, you know, additional protection. But yeah, your statutory rights do apply, absolutely apply. What I would flag, though, is that when you go to a retailer or you go to a car trader, for example, about a faulty product, and maybe you're, you know, they can often, you know, you can have an experience where you're being strung along back and forth, you haven't got it resolved, and you want to take it further, the system that's there in Ireland to do that is the small claims court, it's district court. And the small claims court is an easy way for consumers to access that court without needing to go to a solicitor. but the threshold for it is 2,000 euros. So if your product costs more than 2,000 euros and, you know, the value that you're seeking a refund or, you know, a response for is more than 2,000 euros, then you're excluded and it's up to you to go and get a solicitor and take a full case through the court. So, I mean, that is something where we really see car buyers and people having issues with cars being severely disadvantaged and facing real barriers in terms of access to justice. So we would like to see that changed, and we're optimistic that hopefully the program or government may actually put a commitment in there in relation to that so that more consumers can avail of those mechanisms that are there to help consumers in that position.
Just staying with the cars, If you purchase a car and you've driven it off the forecourt, this is I'm phrasing a listener's question here, and you believe it to be faulty, can you go back and get a replacement? Do you know what I mean? Like, so say I bought an air fryer and one drawer's not working, it's quite easy to sort of say, right, I could go back in 3 weeks or whatever, or even beyond that, and get a replacement. With a high valued item like a car, surely the same rules apply, though. Or do you have to leave it with them for months while they say they're waiting on a part or replacing it or fixing it or what have you? Are you entitled to a replacement on a new car?
Same rules do apply, and it's the same principle again with the 30 days. Your rights are strongest in 30 days, and then for the first year, you know, slightly lower but still strong. So what I'd really say to people is when you've bought a car, the first 30 days are critical because you have that right to just go and look for a refund.
Right.
You know, and once those 30 days expire, you can be in a situation where there may be like a repair piece, and sometimes there is a wait for a part. You know, and these things can get hugely complicated. I mean, we see scenarios where, for example, people have maybe traded a car in and then they have an issue with the car that they've bought, but their existing car is already gone. You know, it can get really complicated. So what you do want to do is take action as early as possible. And if, even if, for example, the trader is saying, well, look, just give it another couple of weeks or come back to us and, you know, on whatever date, you know, just really, you want to get it addressed ASAP and keep a very firm eye on that calendar. And if it's within the first 30 days, potentially just look for that refund. Like, don't get involved in a big back and forth over several months. Just get your money back.
If I bought something for 50 quid in December and it's faulty and I bring it back and now the price in January is 30 euro, where do I stand?
Well, so it stands with the basic contract is made at the time that you bought it. Mm. So in terms of like your refund is for the value of what you paid. And the fact that that good is a different price now really isn't related to your loss. So, you know, in terms of your refund, it's the original 50 and not the 30 that would apply. You're entitled to one.
A caller says a retailer must have a different customer rights. If you can't find your receipt, they will not even exchange the item. So I was 46-year-old Dan a few months ago. I mean, like, I'm always on the side of the people. Don't get me wrong, but it would open the floodgates, I think, if you were just walking into places with items purporting to be from there and looking to exchange them. I mean, the retailer has to have a little bit of protection there as well. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, ultimately, the retailer has to be shown to be liable, to be the person who sold the faulty product, for them to have those responsibilities. I mean, so there is a very good reason as to why it's a proof of purchase. And look, it is a flexible proof of purchase. The legislation doesn't mention that it has to be a specific receipt or in a specific format. You do see people where, you know, they maybe use credit card statements that kind of can clearly, or, you know, other things that will clearly demonstrate that they've bought the product in a particular retailer.
But if you bought a number of products and you had it on your debit card, it might not actually show the value of the individual product. Is that still enough?
Not necessarily. I mean, really, that will be up to a judge to say whether or not they accept that as a proof of purchase. If you were to take the case further, there isn't a list of what's exactly required or not. But so we really would recommend that you do just keep the receipt. And that is getting easier. You know, online shopping, obviously, you have it in your inbox. But a lot of retailers now, actually, even on the high street, will give you the option to have your receipt emailed to you. And would recommend doing that because then you have it if anything goes wrong in the future.
All right. Unless you have an embarrassing email address, Grania, and then it can be quite humiliating, but still better to do it than not. Grania Griffin, Director of Grania Griffin, Director of Communications at the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. If people, you know, we've just done a few Q&As here, right? If people want to contact the commission as they do, and it was really quite interesting actually to hear that the majority of contacts are over new and used car sales, but how do they access the offices of the commission?
So we have loads of information on our website, which is ccpc.ie, or you can give us a ring, and it's 01-402-5555.
Thanks very much. Have a great day. Okay. Now, thank you very much for all of your questions in relation to the last item. I didn't get to all of them, but I got to the majority of them. Maria Rush is fitness instructor at Rush Fitness in Letterkenny and is with us now. Good morning to you and a happy new year, Maria.
Happy new year, Greg, and to everybody listening. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. What's your, I mean, listen, it's all down to the individual. You want to see anyone at the time that's right for them, of course. Do you have a particular view on people getting up to a high dole, think they have to make a big change in January and then maybe the steam runs out third week in January or February, or what's your view?
So for me, resolutions are something that require resolve. I've written about resolutions many times before, even outside of the fitness industry. I have a massive issue with the idea that we have to change everything on the 1st of January. People put an awful lot of pressure on themselves to decide that they're going to have a clean slate, that they're going to change everything to make them, to find this happiness that they think they're going to find. When in reality, resolutions require resolve, and you don't get anything worth having without actually working towards it. I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves, and I think if you wake up on New Year's Day, you're doing well. it's the next day from last year. Yes, there's a clean slate. Yes, you can get romantic about it and say, "Oh, new year, new this," but you know you're actually fine as you are. If you want to make changes, make them, but make them for the right reasons, not because you feel that you have to.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we can build ourselves up to the point where maybe we're setting ourselves unrealistic goals, okay? So you've a full, if you're going to change in 2025, right, you've 365 days, and often it can be a slow process for good reason, depending on your level of fitness going into it. So it's not to try and sort of say, right, by St. Patrick's Day, I want to feel or look like that.
But at least St. Patrick's Day is a bit of a realistic goal, at least.
It's only 3 months.
You're giving yourself a time. I think, speaking of time, people think, I'll do it now on Monday. I'll start it now on the new year. By the end of January, as you said, they're gone. Like they're finished 3 weeks in. 3 weeks is a long time to change absolutely everything. The other side of time is that people say, oh, I'll try it for a month, but you're not going to see any results in a month. You know, so yes, I think it's more a case of asking yourself why you want to do something and taking small steps towards whatever that goal may be. That goal may just be to feel better. Like, what is your why? So are you wanting to get in shape? Are you looking to lose weight? Are you looking to put on weight? Because that's actually a huge issue as well. Do you want to build muscle? Are you looking to be able to keep up with your kids? Do you want to be able to lift the elderly person you're looking after? So whatever your why is, then you find what your outcome will be and what your goal will be. Your resolution's a big fancy word that's thrown about, and it's so, you know, everybody's got New Year's resolutions. The amount of people, and I guarantee listeners will agree with me on this, who have already decided, I'll leave it to start on Monday. Because it doesn't fall on the first. For me, I'll start back at everything I do on Monday. Christmas is for enjoying, it's for relaxing. But, you know, we could then put it off to the following Monday, and then I'll leave it to February. You know, today's as good a day as any to start whatever it is, but make yourself realistic, bite-size goals.
I mean, you have a lot of people of different ages and fitness levels down at Rush Fitness, and not talking about any individual, but the one thing I've noticed about the times we've been down there is, you know, many of them are a little bit older, you know, maybe 35 plus. But the one commonality is the energy, the backs are straight, right? The posture's great. You know, and I think that's if that's what we're thinking about, maybe that's more beneficial about how we feel about after we've just gone up the stairs, you know, how our back is when we get up in the morning, you know, rather than necessarily, you know, running a marathon and being sexy as you know, me and my little size 8.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so I think the people that seem to be serious about the gym, they've many different priorities, but a lot of it seems to be down to a quality of life.
Yeah, and it's quality of life. It's feeling better. And it's, you said going up the stairs, it's actually being able to go upstairs for a lot of people. Like the average, our mean age in the gym is anything over 35 up to 76. people who have realised, number one, they want to feel better, they want to maybe look better. For a lot of people, including myself last year, it's injuries and prehab mm-hmm. and trying to get through issues that they're attending physio for, and then perhaps before surgery, after surgery. There's like fitness is for everyone, and it is something that you can do throughout all your ages, all your abilities. We don't have any type in Rush Fitness, which we're very proud of. We do have younger people as well who want to run marathons and who are, you know, who want to feel a certain way and look a certain way. But a lot of them stick it out because they realise the benefits it's giving them physically and mentally.
But gyms are for all, and that's kind of as much the point I was trying to make as anything else. Mm-hmm. And also too, and a lot of people listening may well have done this, in that whether you choose to do it at the start of the year or later in the year, or whenever, could be a big birthday, whatever, right, is decide, right, I'm going to start running now. And then they try and run 5K, not working up to that. Or they get a gym membership and they don't see a PT, and they go in and they do pull down a few times, kick their legs a couple of times.
Straight on the cardio machines.
You know what I mean?
I
think it's important, isn't it, that you... classes are great, or working with a PE, so you are actually not wasting your time. Because if you do commit your... Yeah. 3 months to St. Patrick's Day, let's say, for an example, you want to be doing stuff that's benefiting you, don't you?
You want to do stuff that's benefiting you. You also want to do something that you enjoy.
Mm.
And everybody has different things that they enjoy. Some people enjoy weightlifting. Some people enjoy dance classes. Some people enjoy running. I love running. Running doesn't love me. I think for certain people, when you get to a certain age, the hips and knees just don't like it.
Yeah.
But strength training will help with that as well. So if you do have something that you really enjoy doing, find it. You know, nobody is going to willingly put themselves out of bed early in the morning to go to do something that they don't like doing. You may not like the idea of walking into the studios at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, but you know you'll feel better walking out. So that's what you need to focus on. It's that feeling of achievement, or of knowing that you feel better. You know? But it's not everybody does have different things that they enjoy. Some people love to dance. Some people love to relax and stretch. You know, for me, I like to lift stuff and hit stuff. That's what I enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. But it's also the how you feel in your mind. It's being able to make space for yourself in busy lives. That's so important.
I suppose
well.
We're all the same if you x-ray us, really, for the most part, right? And the core of us is our skeleton, isn't it, really? And then the muscles and all the stuff that you would work on are the support structures for that, aren't they? Protecting your knees, protecting your hips, straightening your back.
Yeah.
That's one of the benefits is... Now, if there's a little bit of fat on top of that or a lot of fat on top of that, that's not what fitness actually is it? It's you can be incredibly fit and may not appear to be fit.
Exactly.
And you can be incredibly thin and not be fit either.
Yeah. And, you know, strength training is something that we've been trying to promote especially among women over the age of 35, because your bone density will improve with strength training. So that core...
And it often disimproves through the menopause
indeed. And again, you know, menopause is such a buzzword at the minute in marketing from the point of view of fitness, but the facts are there to prove that strength training and resistance training, even once a week, will help females from the age of 30 on, you know. When you look at someone, you cannot tell their strength, you cannot tell their ability, you can't tell what's going on in their heads. But the scales are another thing that people have a huge misconception about. If I put two bags onto two separate scales that weigh the same, but one of them's full of processed food and sweets and chocolate, and the other's full of good food, the two scales will weigh the same thing, but they aren't telling me the reality of what's in the bags. And it's the same with bodies. You know, you look at people sometimes and think, oh, she fits into that size, she's in great shape. You don't know what's going on with that person. They could be unwell, they could be fighting illness, they could be fighting mental illness.
Do we focus too much on weight at any of us? Because, I mean, you could have someone who's really, really fit, right? Takes a break for Christmas, eats a little bit more, goes out for a few drinks, more dehydrated, takes on water, could hop on the scales and be a stone heavier.
Yeah.
Right, and it's not actually really a reflection of where they're at. It's just they've absorbed an awful lot of water and all that type of stuff. So the scales really are lying to us half the time.
They're lying to us half the time, and they don't tell you what's standing on them. You know, we have an in-body machine in the studios that allows us to tell people and show people their percentage body fat, the muscle mass. And even myself, having stepped on it over the last few years since we got one in, there's times where my weight will not change at all, but physically I know that I look a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, so... It's a great way of, if you are someone who's hooked on the scales, come and talk to me, because it's something we can show that often gives people a reality call that actually, this is what my visceral fat is at, and that's the fat around the organs, and that's usually the first thing we look at.
And that's the important
stuff. It's not what's on the outside, it's what's inside you.
So we've talked about this before, but we're touching new ears all of the time. I think for a lot of people, the barriers are what happens when I walk in the door? You know, will everyone be looking like Jane Fonda from 30 or 40 years ago? I feel a bit too big, right? And I don't want to wear leggings yet or shorts or whatever it might be. You know, and believe that they're going to go in there and it's going to be sort of that 80s gym, you know, the clunker metal and people looking at themselves in the mirror. Yeah. I mean, gyms are not, the majority of gyms are like that, are not like that anymore. So what's your message to someone who is this, who's putting their own barriers up? They want to do it right, but they think, I can't go into a gym.
Yeah, the amount of times I've had someone say, I'll start in the summer when I've lost a bit of weight.
Yeah.
And it's a very genuine fear.
It's human.
Well, first of all, the fear is of walking in. And as you said, all those things, who's going to be looking at me? What I won't know what to do. I'm not wearing the right clothes. They have all these kind of these obstacles put up straight away before they even start. Our studios, and again, I can only speak for Rush Fitness. Obviously, there's different types of gym and studio around the town, and there are so many different fits for people. But in ours, you walk in, you will meet one of the head coaches straight away. We don't have mirrors apart from in the bathrooms. That's it.
You could even get rid of them.
Yeah, we could. Everybody.
No,
people have to dry their hair before they go to work. You know, it's very important.
Yeah.
There's no one looking at you, and because of the way our small group personal training works. Yes, you're in a small group, but you're working on you. Nobody else is looking or paying attention at what you're doing because they're worried about themselves. The coaches are the only people who are looking at you.
So you make sure no one's going to do themselves any damage because they'll come in and have a run through with you or Emmett, whoever might be there, right? Test their
mobility.
You can tell, you can describe that. But in other words, is lifting this way good for you or bad for you? How you like it is tailored like that.
Everything's
isn't it?
Tailored, everything's coached. Like I have gone out to the car and taken people in by the hand. I have had males and females actually ring me to say, I can't do this when they're coming in for their one to one into the empty studio. And that's absolutely fine. That's part of my job, but it's completely understandable. So we will bring you in the door, we will meet you at the door or at the car, whatever suits. We will then assess mobility and movement. If there are any previous injuries that we'll need to work around, we will. We'll also always get guidance from our from chartered physios that we work with, and some cases medical clearance, because there's no fitness instructor who knows what they're doing from the point of view of medicals. Mm.
You know, but that doesn't mean you're necessarily disqualified from being
all,
a part of it. It just means that you know, and certain things can be monitored and so on and so
and
forth.
And we do have the MyZone system, and we have quite a few members actually who have heart issues and have had heart issues who wear the belt, and actually pregnant ladies as well. And part of their training is that we require them to wear the belt so that we can keep an eye on what's happening, keep them as safe as possible. And then we'll go through the mobility. We know very quickly what your starting point is. We can also see huge potential where we can see someone coming in and say, right, we'll start you on this, but I know within 2 weeks this person will be on the next level. Yeah. And the coaches, we have meetings in the staff area every day. We talk through the clients. We make sure that everybody knows. If someone messages me to say, look, I've tweaked my shoulder, that's passed on to the team. Our coaches watch everything.
It's like, I was chatting to an older lady. She fell over. She had a brain hemorrhage. Then it turned out she had stomach cancer. Then she fell over a couple of times. She was lying in a hospital bed in Letterkenny University Hospital, told she'd never walk again. Started to engage with a interdisciplinary team who knew what was wrong with her, knew how to get her back up on feet. And now 5 years later, she's driving herself, she's walking around, she's going to her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and that's a lady in advanced years too. So if that's possible, anything's possible.
As long as you're moving in life, you're winning. You know, you mentioned the 80s Jane Fonda type thing earlier. I think that's the misconception people have. They think we're all going to be in leotards, that we're all going to be running around in our leg warmers, and maybe on Halloween, that's about the only day you see that. But there's no uniform. You wear what you're comfortable in. You
exactly,
come in,
yeah.
You do what you have to do.
I noticed that as well too. And it's and some people go in and they're self-motivated, keeping themselves to themselves. Some of them, it's part of a community, and that's really important to them. It's about suiting the client. Finally, fear of failure, right? I've tried this before, it didn't work. I tried it last January and I fell through. I started trying to, you know what I mean? That's another barrier we place. And we're our worst enemies.
We are.
Once we overcome this stuff, we can achieve anything, all right? The fear of failure. Mm. What should people be feared of that?
Those who don't fail never look foolish. It's a line from Wicked, and it's so, so true. Yes, of course, you can be afraid of failure, but if you don't try, you're not going to know. And actually, the achievement you get from winning at something or from achieving something is so much more powerful than the fear of failure. Make small steps. If you're sitting at home today listening, thinking, I'd love to feel better, I'd love to look better, whatever your goal is, start small. Drink more water this week. Change your eating a little bit. I'm not telling you to stop having takeaways, to stop eating what you like to eat, but add in, okay, 2 days a week, I'm going to have like single, you know, I'm going to have meals where I have potatoes and veg and protein, more protein, and try to get moving. If you start off January doing that, then perhaps think, right, I'm going to do a bit more walking. I'm really enjoying how I feel on a Sunday morning now because I haven't had as much wine or I haven't had that pizza at the weekend to make myself feel bloated. Start to pay attention and write down the wins that you're having.
Yeah.
And then it becomes lifestyle. It becomes
practice
habit.
Yourself, really.
Practice and be nice to yourself. But if you set yourself 10 goals for this week, unless you're a super person, it's not
No, you have to be realistic. Do you work with patients with osteoporosis?
We do. Now, Emmett would be the person that will answer those questions properly because he's obviously the head coach and he would be the person that we would bring. Anybody who comes to me or rings to say that they have a pre-existing condition, he will do the assessment with them. But yes, we absolutely do. We have quite a few people with osteopenia fasta as well. Sorry, I went into Irish there straight away. We have ways that we can work around all issues from the point of view of strength training. Now, we would have certain people who the sweat sessions upstairs, we would say, look, that's not for you just now. Even myself last year, I had shoulder surgery and I wasn't allowed to do those sessions for nearly a year, but I still train 3 days a week in a small group. So we have people who have, we have one person at the moment actually who's just had the same surgery I had, who is just not working the shoulder apart from what the physio has told us to do with them.
Brilliant.
So yes, we absolutely can. And if they want to get in touch, I'm easy to find.
Yeah, perfect. It's Maria Rush, fitness instructor at Rush Fitness in Letterkenny. And it's a fantastic facility for people there. And, you know, especially in and around Letterkenny, but not exclusively around Letterkenny, there's lots of people who are working in this area with the same sort of an ethos as well. And there's lots of classes in different places as well. It's a case of just, you know, backing yourself and going out and sort of
giving yourself time.
Yeah, exactly.
We have 47 times a week from 6 in the morning until 7 o'clock at night is our last session. Those 47 times are flexible. So if you join up to do two of those sessions a week, you're not tied to a certain time. Mm. So if you want to do 6 a.m. on a Monday and 4 p.m. on a Friday, that's absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. So we are, from the point where myself and Emmett are busy parents ourselves, we know what it's like to try and fit things in. I work in the studios and I can hardly get training sometimes, but it's finding that flexibility. So our app does allow that. And then our upstairs sessions as well, we do have a sweat sessions that are there as a free add-on to people who are doing strength training.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks so much, Maria. It's always an absolute pleasure. That's Maria Rush. If you want to check out Rush Fitness, yeah, you can just search them, as Maria says. She's not hard to find. Let this year be the year that you make yourself feel better. We've got Mark in studio with us, and we're talking the darts. Hi, Mark. How are you getting on?
Good, yeah. Looking forward to the darts final tonight.
Very good indeed. What have you thought of the competition so far?
I have loved it. I thought it's been brilliant. Early on, there was a lot of seeds going out, and then in the last eight, there ended up being like eight of the biggest names in the sport. So, I think it's been a brilliant tournament. Would Christmas be the same without the darts?
I don't think it would be. No. I don't think so. And it's been a funny year in the darts in that there's been a lot of upsets or seeds going out early in the competition. I don't know whether they've got so much money or whether other players are coming up and showing how good they are. I think for the world, it's good that you had, you know, some of the big names in the quarters and the semis and heading into the final, isn't it? Not that the sport's in any danger whatsoever, but there's nothing like watching a final with the two of the best in the world there.
Yeah, you need a good competitive final, and hopefully that's what we have tonight. Last night's semi-finals, you know, not that they disappointed, but I thought they would be a bit closer, but that does set up for a nice close final tonight. Hopefully Van Gerwen is, you know, on form. Hopefully he can bring that form into the final tonight. He hasn't been, you know, his flying self in the past couple of years. Since, like, his last world title was in 2019, three-time champion. Like, I think, in my opinion, I think he's maybe a bit written off coming out of this final. I mean, I was looking at the odds there. I mean, Littler's 4-11 favourite to win tonight. A 17-year-old in his, you know, is pretty much his first year as a on the professional scene. Yeah. I know he has a couple of majors in there, but
I think Van Gerwen's going
to
win tonight.
Yeah, Van Gerwen is 2-1 to win this tonight. Like, I just think that's
you did a bit of a poll on this too, didn't you? What
I put up on my Instagram last night, just after the two semi-finals, and I just said who you got, Littler or Van Gerwen, and 83% of people went with Littler. Now, I think if you were, you know, to ask me, you might ask me in a wee while, who do you fancy? I think I'll go with Littler, but I mean, I just don't think you can write off a three-time world champion, one of the best to ever do it. Like, it's just,
I think it's just going to be a 180 fest. Who's to say there could be nine darters? I think there's going to get a point to where both of them will be on nine darters at some point or other. It's just got that feeling to it. It's just, Van Gerwen has looked very, very good, and he's improved all the while. As you say, you know, he's not necessarily been in the form that people might expect, but there's something different in this championship with him that I've seen that I haven't seen throughout the rest of the year.
Van Gerwen has had a tougher run to the final. He's beaten Brendan Dolan, not an easy player to beat. He met a Jeffrey de Graaf that was on like flying through the tournament. Callan Ridds, he was on fire as well. As you talk about a 180 fest, it was only last night that Luke Littler actually overtook him as the most 180s in the competition. And then, I mean, he just swept Chris Dobie aside last night, 6-1. I mean, Dobie beat Gerwin Price, who I think a few days ago I was looking at Gerwin Price thinking that he was the man to beat in the competition. And he just, you know, he went a couple of sets down, came back, and Gerwin Price never came back into it. So I think Van Gerwen has had the tougher games. You look at the list of people that Littler has beat: Ryan Meikle, Ian White, Ryan Joyce, and out of form Nathan Aspinall. And last night, Stephen Bunton didn't really play to his potential either.
Stephen Bunton was really, really frustrating, because at the very highest level, you know, he messed up 25 a few times and he had chances, and it could have been so, so different. He'll be kicking himself this morning because he was there.
Yeah, that's why I think tonight will be a much closer affair. Van Gerwen won't miss the chances that other people have missed against Littler. Littler might get over the line, but I just fancy, you know, in those tight sets and the tight legs, Van Gerwen won't miss where others will, and I think that might be the difference tonight.
Why is darts so popular, Mark? It's the second biggest sport in Britain, just behind the Premier League. Matchroom, who run the sport, they make twice as much from darts as they do boxing, which when I heard that, I thought it was actually really quite remarkable.
And there's some money in boxing too.
Well, considering they've had AJ in front of 90,000 and what have you. So they make twice as much from that. And they sold out, already next year's pretty much sold out, right? 4,000 or 5,000 a day. They've filled Wembley, right? The Wembley Arena it's for the Premier League, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why is it so popular? Is it because we can do it? Is it because you can, during the ad break, pick up a set of darts and throw 26?
Maybe. I think that's generous. I think there's just something, you know, the Sky Sports have gotten right. You know, you look back now to the BDO days in Lakeside, it's so flat. If you turn that competition on, it's just so flat. It's almost unwatchable at times, but that's due to the quality of the players and the atmosphere in the arena. Whereas, you know, the PDC, the Sky Sports, Matchroom have just gotten it right that the players, I think, have improved in the past 10, 15 years on the PDC scene. That's probably because the money has increased and players can go full-time earlier in their career and, you know, really, really improve as players. And the better the spectacle, the better the atmosphere. And then, you know, you only have to turn on Sky Sports to see that atmosphere. People dressed as bananas and astronauts drinking pitchers of beer. You know, it just looks like the best time ever. You combine that with Littler and Van Gerwen tonight hitting 180 after 180, being on nine darter after nine darter. I mean, it's just a perfect cocktail of sport, in my opinion.
And just as it relates to Luke Littler, I mean, any sport couldn't dream of having someone coming through, a new generation coming through. I mean, the guy was 16 last year. He's 17 this year. He's not even an adult. He's made, I think, 850 without this competition in prize money alone, not to mention all the sponsorship. I mean, how impressive is it, someone of his age, to be able to perform on that stage at this level?
In darts, it's been fairly unheard of. I think there's a stat going about, I think Van Gerwen might have been, you know, mid-20s or something when he won his first world title. So I think he has 4 or 5 years to win his first world title and still be the youngest to ever win it. Last year, he was a 2-2 away from going 5-2 up in the final against Humphreys. He was very, very close last year to doing it. I think if he had nailed that 2-2 last year, he would have won it, which I think would have been probably one of the most incredible achievements that's ever been done in sport. Mm. Like, he did miss out, and in fairness to him, there was questions last year. I remember after the World Championships, was it a once-off? Was it a one-hit wonder? He got put into the Premier League. A lot of people thought that it was too soon for that. Ends up winning the Premier League. Yes. Goes on to win, you know, major, like not major, but he won title after title. He won the Grand Slam of Darts. There's no way that this is going to be a 1 year, one hit wonder. This Luke Littler is here to stay in the world of darts.
And he's breaking records. He's breaking not just age related records, like 180 records. He may, if it goes long tonight, he may well beat the 180 record in the World Championships. You know, but obviously it would need to, the need to go deep into the competition. But anyway, there's going to be a huge audience for it tonight. It's going to be on every TV screen in every pub in the country. Your followers on Instagram, they're clear. They believe that Luke Littler is going to win 8-2. I think Van Gerwen's going to, I just think he looks on the form of his life. I think he's motivated. I think he's driven. And I think he's got that big stage experience. 2-1. If I was a betting man, I'd have a piece of that.
Yeah, Van Gerwen just has something about him that the others don't. He has that bit of bottle. He would probably use a different word, but he has that bit of bite and bottle. You know, maybe even bully is probably a strong word, but I feel like he's the kind of presence that overawe Luke Littler on stage. No, not that Luke Littler. I think Luke Littler is a stone cold winner in his quarter there against Nathan Aspinall. You know, I was watching it with my sister and my mum, and Aspinall was kind of laughing and smiling and joking. And he might have been a more endearing character, but there was a stern coldness.
Bonte was at the same crack last night.
I don't like it. No, I think you're in a world championship semi-final.
Kind of stuff.
Leave it alone. I don't care if he's likable or you know, he's playing up to the crowd. I think he is a stone cold winner, and I don't think he'll be affected by all the outside noise.
And I think you're so right that a 17-year-old, I think in terms, I think he showed Aspinall and Bonting, as much as I like the both of them, up a little bit, because that laughing and joking and fist bumps and high fives.
It's all well and good. You need to win. You're there to win. So
right. So who are you picking?
Van Gerwen.
All right, okay, that's no fun.
All right, sorry.
Thanks so much, Mark. Mark from our sports team. Great to have you win. That's the darts. Are you looking forward to it? Who do you think's going to win? Are you watching? Any observations? 086 60 25,000, or give us a call at 07491 25,000. News, and then that's entertainment just around the corner.